हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम शांति 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 ओम जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके सो नाउ वी कम टू लज्जोमन अस्मक्रामन राइट सो दिस सेक्शन इन हियर आफ्टर द यू नो मीन्स द यस नो मे वी विल डू दैट व्हेन वी we'll see how it goes here. So the Lajhoma, this is one of the central points. So it means you have the girl, you know, the hands being tied, the water being poured, the knot being tied, her going like that. You have then the sindur dhanam, then this Lajhoma Asulkramana, and the seven steps. You could say these are the core elements of the wedding. Other things are there for purification and, you know, further auspiciousness. Like that, and deal with, you know, other finer points of the whole samskar. But these are the main core elements. Okay. The bride and groom should stand. The groom passing behind the bride, should go to the south side, her right side, and face north. Right? So now you see it's up to this point, then she's always sat to his right, or they may face each other. But if they go back to that, they'll go back to she's on the right. And you see, even in the last in that home, the Ajna Homa for some purification, then she was always sitting in the right. Now he goes around behind, and so now she's on the left. Right? So you see, is that. She's staying on that right side, getting the blessings and everything, and then he goes around, and so then he's making that endeavor. So that means now she is, you know, accepted in that position as the wife. It means they're not technically yet, but now it starts from here. So and this is we can see is the ones before this were preliminary, even though they're part of the main ceremony. But this one and the seven steps, these are actually the you could say the core. Aspect that then makes them married, right? He should hold her hands in his right hand. The mother of the bride, her brother, or a brahmana should place the grinding stone and pestle in front of the bride and place her right foot on the stone, right? Right. So either the mother of the bride, she does that, her brother does that, or the brahmana. It just depends on what's the relationship or who's available or like that kind of thing. So then up where you would sit for me, because in other words, before he was sitting in at the place of doing the yajna, so she was sitting to his right, and so now they stand. He passes around. Now she'll stand where he was because the last one he was offering things. This one she's off making the offering, like that, and so. Then and they put the stone. It'll be right there in front of the Yajna Kunda, right? It's basically as close as possible. The groom should say, "Mount this stone, and like a stone, be steadfast in devotion at the feet of the Lord. Annihilate those who would harm you. May you never fall under their influence." Right. So then, you know, it means being steady in devotional service. That's the main element of the whole. You know, purpose of wedding is that so the couple then they work together in Krishna consciousness, you know, like that. And then yeah. And so then and then annihilate those who would harm you means, you know, in other words, they don't have a consideration. So in other words, if there's some you know, your one's some relationship, even if one's upset, you know, one may not talk or this or that, or there may be, you know, some points being made, some punishment like this, but the element of annihilate means they just don't matter, they don't exist. So there's no question, there's no anything going on. You know, they're not enemies, they're not this and that. Just whoever would give you a problem, it's just they don't even count. Right? And so then here is that, and, you know, they can also mean, you know, the enemies, the six enemies, lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, envy. These, you know, can be any of these things that are impediments for one's devotional service, whether it's the direct activities or the secondary religious activities. The groom should place two shruvas of ghee in the bride's cupped hands, right? So she'll put the hands together so that they overlap and so that they'll be very tight, right? And place two shruvas of ghee in the bride's cupped hands, and the mother of the bride should place 1/5 of the ludge from the basket over the ghee. The groom should pour two shruvas of ghee over the ludge. The bride, without separating her hand, should pour the ludge into the fire. So that means they're right next to the fire. And because you're dealing with ghee and all that, when, you know, this is just pointers for whoever's explaining or organizing of that, because the girl's wearing a very nice outfit. Ghee on that nice outfit is not good. You know, it's not, and it's not a question of maybe or sometime. No, it's just not good. So it doesn't happen. So it has to be, everyone is aware of what's going on. So she's going to be as close to the fire as possible. You know, the dress and that won't be, you know, will be out of the way as much as possible. And her hands will be as forward as possible. So that anything that's there, that means it doesn't drip directly on the dress, but it doesn't mean it drips on the side of the kunda and splashes back onto the dress. Right? So it's just, it's there. And so here, as he's saying, they put two shruvas of ghee. So that's a good amount of ghee. So you're putting a few hundred grams of ghee here. You know, one shruva may be, depending on what it is. Oh, I mean, or best, it depends on the size, you know, 30 to 50 grams of ghee. So you might have, you know, 100, oh, between 100 and 200 grams of milliliters of ghee. You know, and so, you know, the ghee should be warm. It's what you're using from that. And so like that. So our hands have to be very tight. You know, you can practice that by putting your hands together, putting water there. And if it won't leak out, then that's the right amount. And also with that much ghee and everything, when you pour, it will just go because you've already put ghee on the hands. And then the koi is floating on top of that and then more ghee. So it'll just go into the fire. Right. And without opening the hand, she just pours. She doesn't open her fingers and go like this and all that kind of stuff. You just pour like that. The groom should say, "This woman speaks while offering ludge to the fire. May my husband be long lived. May he live 100 years. May our devotion to the Lord flourish." Right. And so, you know, we can see is that because with the cloth that he gave before, the Vastri Paridhana, it was his, you know, prayer and his blessings that she may live a long life, 100 years. And now in this one, then it's the same for, she's now offering that for him. The pair should circumambulate the fire with the wife in front, right? Because this is her part of the ceremony. So she's doing this and he's accompanying, right? You know, so no one should get upset. No, he should go in front. She has to follow. This is her ceremony, and he's just coming along with, right? You know, it means it's to the two of them together, but this part is about her. We have to remember the wedding is about the girl, right? Both, you know, the socially and religiously and then purification and all that, because whatever purification is there for the girl at this point, he already got as a brahmachari. Right. And that's continuing now. So now she does these things to catch up. But as it said, she's been doing all these wonderful things in the house before. She's getting all that benefit that makes her, you know, gives her that piety and qualification. So they circumambulate the fire. And when they're doing that, then the bride is going from her parents' house to the house of the groom. Right. So that's the thing, is she's taking the steps around the fire. She's going from her house to the house of the groom. Having done her duties well before her betrothal, O bride, help us remove the enemies as the flood of water cleanses the earth. Right? So with this, it switches because up to this point, father's given. So it's given, but you know, it's still kind of, she's with that party. But now with this part of the wedding, it switches. Now she's part of the husband's house. You know, it, the switch is there. With this, it's complete, that switch. And then help us remove the enemy. So the enemies then, you know, naturally would be, you know, inauspicious qualities, you know, mentalities, action, and all these. You know, it comes with the enemies, lust, anger, greed, envy, like this. And, you know, any other element that is just, you know, beyond that, just the inappropriate behavior or thoughts or ideas how to do something. One becomes too materialistic or too offensive or too, how you say, envious, or, you know, any of these kind of things. Because in these things, then the women can be very, you know, meet in their own problems, then that's another thing. Then they may or may not think clearly. But if it's the husband's side, when men have problems, it's very clear, easy for the women to be clear-headed, because it's not theirs. They just look at it and go, oh, you just do that. Right? And as a flood of water cleanses the earth, so when you have a lot of water, that cleanses the earth. The earth is purified, you know, when it's water is sprinkled and like that. And so if there's a flood, it becomes nourished, it becomes everything. So that means then also by the wonderful relationships in the family and all that, then naturally then that relationship between them becomes, that bond becomes very strong. The interaction becomes very, you know, committed, and these kind of elements, then it removes all other points, because as you see, as he has been trained by the guru, she has been trained in the house, then she belongs to, you know, Vishnu, and then seeing in this context, and then now, then they're doing everything in devotion, right? Returning to the stone again, the groom facing north should take the bride's hand in his right hand. It means, in other words, she's facing the fire, means the east. He's standing to her side, to her right side, you know, facing her, you know, or where her hands are, right? You know, because he has to be at the point where he's going to be putting the ghee, because the ghee will be underneath, and then so that'll go into her hands. And then on the other side, then will be who's it? And the mother of the bride, then she's putting the ludge into the hands. She's on the other side. She's on the, into her left, on the north facing south. Mother should place the bride's right foot on the stone and stand with the basket of ludge, right? So here, in other words, the mother would be the first choice if the mother's not there. Then it would be the brother if that's not there. Then the Brahmin, whoever is, you know, organizing the ceremony. Like that, or, you know, somebody like that who's respected or close or that you feel comfortable with. Right? The groom will say, mount this stone and like a stone be steadfast in devotion at the feet of the Lord. Annihilate those who would harm you. May you never fall under their influence. The bride should receive the ludge and ghee in her hands and offer into the fire. Right? So then he says these things. Right? Right, so he's saying, because he's taking her hands and his right, you know, his right hand, is it? In his right hand, he says this mantra, and her hands are like, you know, like this, and then he's taking, he has her hand, his hand underneath, then saying this mantra, then we'll get the ghee put, and then the mother will put the ludge. The groom will say, this girl has made sacrifice to Vishnu, to Hari. May Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, release her and me. Right, so release from the mundane consciousness on that, and that they may come back to Godhead. Remember, Grihastha is an ashram, and so just as the Brahmachari is making advancement in spiritual life, you know, it means as an individual under the care of the spiritual master. Now, graduating, then he along with his wife, now they continue to make that same progress like that. So we always have to remember that this is the whole point of the you know, life in the material world, devotional life, and as the devotees themselves, whatever your situation, right? So then this is that sick, she's doing everything for Vishnu, for Hari, and may Lord Vishnu, who's the controller of all this, then, you know, may everything be nice. Again, the groom with the bride will circumambulate the fire, saying, the bride is going from her parents' house to the house of the groom, having done her duties well before her betrothal. O bride, help us remove the enemies as a flood of water cleanses the earth. Mother will again put the bride's foot on the stone. Mount the stone and like a stone be steadfast in devotion at the feet of the Lord. Annihilate those who would harm you. May you never fall under their influence. Yeah, so he sees that aspect. You know, again, he's holding the things. He's saying this mantra and all these things. Groom will say, this girl has made sacrifice to Vishnu, to Hari. May Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, release her and me. Right? And then, you know, it's poured into the fire. They'll again circumambulate. This bride is going from her parents' house to the house of the groom, having done her duties well before her betrothal. O bride, help us to remove the enemies as a flood of water cleanses the earth. The groom should then pour two shruvas of ghee on the edge of the winnowing basket, place the remaining ludge there, and add two more shruvas of ghee and offer the contents of the basket into the fire, saying, this is an offering unto Achyuta, who makes everything auspicious, right? Because he's infallible, so therefore everything being done nicely for the Lord, then it's there. Infallible means it has to be, you know, in connection with Krishna. He's infallible, so therefore it goes there. So that in this case, then if you're doing and putting the ghee on the edge of the winnowing basket, then you would probably need to use a metal winnowing basket to do this. So then in that case, you take the winnowing basket, it goes on the edge, you know, so because it has little sides there, you pour ghee there, the last bit of ludge goes there, you pour some more ghee, and then that's thrown into the fire. Like that. Otherwise, if you don't have that, or you don't have that ghee, or the arrangements are there like before, is you just put a little bit of ghee, like a couple of drops, and put the ludge, then put some more on top, and then you pour. So it either has to be a smaller amount so that it doesn't become too wet, so it'll still pour, because you could pour grains out of your hand, or it's got to be very wet with four shruvas of ghee so that it just slides out with the ghee. You know, the better offering is with the ghee. Now, along with this, then the assistance to the bride, and that will have, you know, hand towels, you know, like that, so that after she pours, then immediately without having to bring her hands back, then, you know, some of it she can put there, and then you just, you know, pat them so that there's not going to, then they go around the fire, and then you do it like that. Because you don't want the ghee dripping while she walks or things like that. So Saptapadi Gramana, taking seven steps. With rice flour paste, seven small circles should be drawn in a line going in the northeastern direction. The groom should lead the bride to step onto each circle. So that means you can either take the kunda and go from the kunda and do seven steps going in a diagonal that way to the northeast, or you start to the left of the ho tree and clean there, somewhere there. And, you know, it can start all the way back where everybody is normally standing and doing the things, that go seven steps forward there, because it will go towards, when you go from the fire, where you end up still will be northeast. The groom should lead the bride to step onto each circle. She should place the right foot first, the left behind, the groom should say, right? Don't let the left foot cross beyond the right. Right, so this is at the first circle, right? So then you always put the right foot, then the left, then the right, then the left, the right, and then the left, right? So this is important, because here, right foot means taking the right, the correct thing. You know, it's just like when you get out of bed in the morning, you put your out on the right side of the bed, you put your right foot down on the floor first, right? So it's just, you start with the right. When you take a, you know, when they say put your best foot forward, means your right foot, you know. So you have all these sayings that go back to these things. People don't know why they say it, and because of that, they don't do them anymore, because, you know, they've given up the culture. But it's always meaning that, you know, there is an auspicious thing. There is these things. So putting the right foot, that's how you start things. You step into, you know, you're starting something. You step into with your right foot first. You know, whatever is done, it's always done with the right foot first. So here's, don't let the left cross over the right. Means, in other words, whatever you do, always make sure it's according to, you know, Guru Sadhana Shastra. It's auspicious, it's beneficial, it's in context of devotion. It's always should be considered, because women can consider all things at once, right? They can do everything at once. Their activities, their relationships, what they're thinking about, all these things can go on at one time. So it is possible to do. You just think like that, it'll always be done. So that's the first circle. I mean, means, I say, don't let the, excuse me, he just says, don't, he says this before. With the first step, he should say, may Vishnu lead you to strength, right? So this is said before. So it's interesting, because there's an overlap. There's seven steps and there's seven vows, right? But you'll see is that what he's mentioning here when he goes with it, each of the first six steps, he's saying a particular, you know, kind of like a vow or blessing or like this, you know, and consciousness. But when you get to the seventh step, he says, follow the seven vows. So he's mentioned six here. So the seven of the first most important on which all the others are based is this, don't let the left foot cross beyond the right. So taking the seventh step, then there's the consideration of doing all those together, not doing anything inauspicious by the vow that was said before the first step, right? In other words, the first vow was to always do things properly in a Krishna conscious and auspicious, you know, recommended way. Then the other steps are there, and then the seventh step will be with that mentality. Does that make sense? So there's an overlap here. Like that. So then may Vishnu lead you to strength, right? Being, you know, nicely situated in Krishna consciousness, in your duties, you know, in the mentality that you're strong and within the house and everything, you know, but that means to be strength, and there has to be confidence, and there has to be that the relationship is very strong. May, with the second step, he should say, may Vishnu lead you to power, right? So then there's going to be, the application of that, you know, because power comes when you can actually influence. Strength means you have it yourself, you're strong. Power means you can influence outside. So that means now you can apply that strength, you know, that you've gained from Krishna consciousness. Third step, you say, may Vishnu lead you to uphold your vows. So whatever the vows are that one's doing in one's life and all these things, then that should be done. You know, whatever it is, you have the Krishna conscious vows, you have these marriage vows, you have any other elements that one is committed to. With the fourth step, you should say, may Vishnu lead you to happiness, right? And so then when you see everything in the context of Krishna consciousness, perform your activities, then that can actually produce happiness, right? And so that that will be the element there. And also then you have the aspect is then within the household environment and all that, then all the things will be arranged and taken care of so that they naturally give the results and there's happiness. And also lead you to happiness means she has to be trying to be satisfied. If she's not trying to be satisfied, there is no way you can make her satisfied. That's just the way it is. So because she's endeavoring, then everybody else together can make nice. With the fifth step, he should say, may Vishnu lead you to plenty of cows. You know, so there may be, you know, wealth and all the different things. And then you see the basis is then always the cows, centered around the cows. So that would be also the aspects of the dairy and the ghee and the sacrifice and, you know, offerings to the Lord and all that. With the sixth step, he should say, may Vishnu lead you to multiplying spiritual wealth, right? So then the point is that you'll have all your religious facilities and you'll have all your devotional development. With the seventh step, he should say, may Vishnu lead you to maintain the seven sacrifices, right? So all these that he set up to here, then we see up the sixth step, he said, may Vishnu lead you to multiplying spiritual step, but that's the sixth step. But before the first step, so we mentioned, don't let the left cross be on the right. So now it's maintain the seven sacrifices. So that means with that step, then that is that all these will be done together along with that one. Does that make sense? Because, you know, like that. It's just like on the, you have the, we said like an adivas, you offer each one separately, then on a plate together, they're all offered together. Then he said, then having done that, then be my companion for life, fixed in seven vows. May I attain companionship with you? Do not break this bond. May I attain companionship with you? So that means, as you can see, is that most important element in here. I mean, you have the Krishna consciousness. Of course, it's the most important element. But in this, then, we have that the companionship between them, that religious bond between them, then may that come to, that is, they stay together because of the companionship. Right? That's the thing. I remember one time, As a kid, doing a, you know, you had a paper route, and you know, once a month you go and collect the bill, you know, for the paper, the newspapers. And so then I remember there was this one couple, they were like 80 years old, And every time they go by, or generally you'd see them sitting on the front porch in their rocking chairs and just rocking like that. And so I once asked him, I says, you're 80 years old, you know, so you have, you're in the marriage. I mean, what's the dynamic element that makes it work, that you're comfortable? And the old man just said, companionship. That's it. So if you attain companionship, then it works. The groom should address the assembled guests. This wife is most faithful. Come and behold her. Having brought her good fortune, you may now depart. Right? So it's not that everyone's going to come at that one point. So the point is that you come and see, you know, and give her blessings and all that. And after doing that, then all one go. Not that at this point, everyone just stands up and walks out, you know. So it just is that point is that, in other words, kindly everyone give their blessings. And that, you know, before leaving, oh, Amy, please, everybody come visits the, like you even see is in the reception. It's focused on this point, you know, the bride and groom will sit together and then everybody from will come and then, you know, see them, give presents and make some, you know, comments and some blessings and, you know, well wishes and all those kind of things. So it's an important part because then having the blessings of the Vaishnavas makes everything work. Okay. The friend holding a pot of water should then approach the seven circles by passing on the west side of the fire and sprinkle first the groom's head, then the bride's head. So remember is that when you had the fire, you know, facing this way, is that the bride and groom started out on the south side of the fire and then coming on the east side of the fire were the friends, right? And then they came behind. You know, one had a spoon and the other had the pot of water with the, you know, leaves in it. And so then you come up. And they stand behind over there, and then these things go on. I guess this is where you get your idea of the, you know, the best man, or you know, like that. The bridesmaids are the ones that come out with the, like that. So he has his wallets also, right? You know, but, you know, a spoon, right? Like that, and then the pot. So now they're going to circumambulate. Now they go behind the west of the fire, then go around to where they are, and then they'll sprinkle water, right? And then they'll sprinkle on the groom's head and then the bride's head. And so that means you have the water, you have the leaves. So then you take the bunch. So the tips, just dip them in water. You know, you're not trying, and then the sprinkle or, you know, it's just a little. Prokshana means very light. It's not gross. You don't want to put enough that, you know, makeup and cudgel and tilak is drooping down the face. No, it's just a sprinkle. That's it. You know, very important. Because sometimes, as we said before, the men during these ceremonies, other than the priests, just aren't really conscious of things that are going on. Each time the groom should say, right, so he sprinkles the groom's head, then the bride's head, may Vishwak, may Vasudev and all his expansions anoint us as one. May the water make our hearts one. May the Lord of the Wind, our maintainer, make us one. May her lordship make us one. All right, so here's another one of the fun mantras that generally spin people out, because these fine points of where you're dealing with Krishna and how he's as a person, as the Lord of his creation, the controller of his energies, and at the same time the all-pervading elements of his energies, and then how that from the all-pervading, from the Brahman, everything that you see means whatever you're looking at in this world that you can perceive with your senses and all that, that is manifest from Brahman. So this idea of Brahman means nothingness. Then how did he get the chair? How did he get, you know, the rug on the floor and the curtains on the window and the house? And it means it's all Brahman. It's just that Brahman means it's generic, and then there's a specific manifestation. So Brahman has the potency, the primary creation means that there's the principles of all these things. You can take just the general elements, but they can combine into things. And then those things being combined, then you're going to have the specifics. The principle of it is there, and then the specifics of what kind of chair you have, what kind of curtains you have, what kind of car you have, you know, everything like that. So just as we saw before, as the towers and head of Vishnu, then is the Lord of all this, like that. Then here he's also meaning Vasudev, because he's the active. In other words, of them all, is that when you take the elements of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana and practically apply that, in connection with the Lord, that's Vasudeva, the Abhideya. So the point is through devotional service and serving the Lord in all his expansions, that may anoint us as one, right? So here, the anointed, you know, you're sprinkled for water, just like in the graduation ceremony, the brahmachari has been sprinkled. So he's samavartana means he's now anointed. So that's why someone who's graduated is respected, because he's been anointed, right? Because generally the word anoint generally means some very respectable position, right? So anoint us as one, that they may work together. It's not a mayavad thing of oneness. It's a oneness in purpose, that they're both, you know, cooperating. It means, in other words, that Krishna is the main principle, and on the secondary, they use the religious platform of their marriage and their services and their, or whatever they're doing, their determination, and that is one thing. You know, just like before, it said the girl says she's open, entering the husband's house, you know, may she follow that, tread the path that he treads. So they may be one in that they're both focused on Krishna consciousness and performing their Krishna conscious, you know, household life to please Krishna. May the water make our hearts one, because we mentioned before, always the water has that element of rasa. So that relationships and all that, then they have that mood of oneness, and that, you know, that they're always doing the same thing, you know, together. They have that same element there. Because you see, companionship is actually like friendship. You're always together. Everything's there. So it's the main relationships that's there, the companionship. Sometimes you may see is that someone's serving the other, so you have that servitorship. Sometimes you're appreciating the other. Sometimes you're taking the senior role and taking care because, you know, they're sick or something. You're taking care of something for them. Then you have the conjugal element. But you can say is the default setting in the relationship is companionship. And then as it's naturally there, the other elements come into play in their position, but companionship is the constant, like that. Not well understood these days, right? So that means then if the water makes a heart one, then that means that relationship based on this, that becomes the strong bond. May the Lord of the wind, our maintainer, make us one. Because the wind is then, you know, is the life airs, is the action and everything like that. So then, may all our actions and everything, you know, were maintained through sacrifice. And so therefore, then through sacrifice may be one, through our relationship may be one. I mean, everything in connection with Krishna may be one. And may her lordship make us one. And so her lordship, then we're talking about, you know, the internal importance, in this case, the Swarup Shakti, you know, that the Lord's energy, his devotional energy, then she is maybe, so we may be, you know, and devotionally, you know, have that element that it's just about pure devotional service and pleasing Krishna. So it's there. Does that make sense? So in actions, the actions are in Krishna consciousness. The mood is in Krishna consciousness. The relationship is in Krishna consciousness, and that, and the sacrifice is in Krishna consciousness, one, right? So it has that oneness in that the understanding and determination is one in, you know, and in serving Krishna, and application is one, the energy to do that, the mood and relationship and duties. So all that's there. So that's the, you understand? So in other words, these are, if these are understood, then things go so much better that we understand this is the basis of what's going on. It's not a matter of marriage means, okay, now I'll be independent. I got my own place and I can do whatever I want. I don't have to be told by others what to do. That's not actually the point, you know, despite, you know, it's popular, but it's not the point. Okay. Now it says, with the completion of Saptapati Gamana, the bride and groom are considered married. They're married now. There's still a lot of the ceremony. We're only technically halfway through or like that, as far as all the rituals and time will take, but they're married now. So that's what he meant, is that we saw the switch. It's when they're pouring the ludge into the fire, the stone, the ludge into the fire, and going around the fire, and these seven steps, that's the core of the marriage. Right? Before that is preliminary, though there's main points, so as he mentioned, tying the hands, tying the cloth, then the sindur, and then, These are all the preliminaries before that are main and all that. So these are the main elements that have to be done. For a marriage, these points that I just meant have to be done. And if there's time less, people can't get into it. You know, they want the, you know, you now has pronounced your man and wife. You may now kiss the bride, that kind of length of a wedding. Then can you cut it down just to this? Or if someone's getting remarried, then it's only this. In other words, all the other elements have already been done. And so once you're purified, you're purified, right? It doesn't have to be done again. So since this will be the sum scarf for the wife to get purified, if she has gone through this before, then all the sum scars are not done again. So it's just these technical points. You know, tying the hands like that. No, is it tying the hands? Yeah, tying the hands, but there's no giving away, because that's already happened. Father can't give away the second time his daughter. He has the duty to do it once. The second time, it's just these technical points, right? Tying the cloth, the sindur, you know, the stone, the ludgeon, the fire, and these seven steps. The panigrahanam won't be done. So I'll mention panigrahanam can also mean the one before. So I guess you're just going to start with, maybe tying the hands, because two times it's mentioned panigrahana. I always took it that this is the second time, but it would also be the first, because that being tied and then pouring the water, that's the father giving away. Okay. Panigrahana, taking the bride's hands. Okay. Now, if someone was, let's say, married before Krishna consciousness, became divine Krishna consciousness, husband, then joined this and that, later they get married, then, you know, that element of giving away or this and that, but of the other, some scars could be done because they've never been done. Right? But if one's gone through this ceremony, then, as we mentioned, then these main points would be done, and then these other points that we're coming up to now wouldn't be done. And then at the end, the Vaishnava Homa and that, those kind of concluding, that would be done. Panigrahanam. So now they're at the end of the seven circles, right? In the last circle, right? And that, and then again, panigrahanam. The groom should take the bride's two hands in his left hand, and with his right hand, he should grasp the thumb of the upturned hand of the bride, right? Because before, she had her hands together like this, and, you know, they're open, and he had his right hand under. You know, while he's mentioning the mantra like that. But now as she's put her hands together, and he has in his left hand, her hands underneath, you know, so they'll be sitting on top. And then with the other one, he takes the thumb, you know, like that, you know, it's kind of like that handshake, you know, where you do that and then the thumb kind of, yeah. So, and the upturned right hand of the bride. Yeah, oh, upturned right hand. So it'd be like this. She puts her hands like this, and so holds like that, and so he holds there. Okay. The groom should say, "For good fortune, I hold your hand, so you may attain old age in the company of your husband. The four Kumaras have given you to me for performance of household duties as a devotee of Krishna." Right? So the four Kumaras, they're also an incarnation of the Lord. That's what I said before. May Vasudeva and the expansions anoint us as one. Four Kumaras of that, and so then, I can't remember what they represent. Does anybody remember what they represent? The Kumaras, what they're specific? Like Narad Muni, I think it's more the element of knowledge and those things like that. And so in other words, this first point, someone's saying something? No? Okay. So that you have the knowledge, because they're like the jnanis, the tapasvis, so that it has the aspect of with knowledge you're doing your duties without attachment, like that. And that for performance of duties, household duties, a devotee of Krishna. So they're being done in the mood that they're being done to please Krishna, and so without material benefit or gain. You know, so that's the first blessing and stuff like that. Then the second, be gentle-eyed, protecting your husband. Be kind to the animals. Be good-minded, beautiful. Be mother of heroes, mother of life, dear to Krishna, bringing the highest happiness. Be good to us, both man and beast. Right? So in other words, everything in the house is being taken care of. So man and beast, because they have whatever is in the house, whatever is there, that she's nice with everybody. And so here it's also gentle-eyed, you know, so then she's not going to be always grumpy all the time, protecting the husband, you know, seeing that, you know, that he's always practicing the path of righteousness, and that be kind to the animals, be good-minded, right? So that one's trying to do things to the best that you can to see things, how to do nicely to please Krishna. Beautiful, then one's always, you know, confident and that, and comfortable and all, you know, like that. You can say, oh, you can't always do that. It says, what do mothers do for their sons? They may be falling apart like that, but as soon as they walk out to the door into where their kids are, so it's a state of mind. So therefore, then when you're dealing and all that and in the house, and then it has that good mood like that. That's the main thing. Then if there is some problem, yes, the wife can let the husband know it's there. But the main point is he's endeavoring for this. How much you get there is another point. But if she's not endeavoring for this, you can't get this. You know, the modern thing of that, you know, ladies, they don't need men and are grumpy and what can they do? So they're always grumpy. And so nothing can ever work because they're not trying. So the point is if they're trying, then you'll get that some of the time. But if there's no endeavor, it's not understood, it won't happen. Right? And so, as we saw before, you can say, oh, well, what about the man? Point is, why would she be beautiful unless she wants to look beautiful for somebody? And why would she look beautiful unless she likes how they behave, how they deal? So you have to understand, is anytime it's talking about the woman behaving in this very nice feminine way, that's because the man is acting in a masculine way so she can be feminine, right? You can't be feminine if the guy's not masculine. They go together. As masculine he is, that feminine. The less masculine, the less feminine. That makes sense? Yeah. Then the next, may Vishnu generate progeny for us. May Krishna keep us together until old age. Enter your husband's house with auspiciousness. Be good to both us, man and beast. Or good to us, both man and beast. Yeah. So that point, both be good to us, both man and beast. You see, that's said in every one of the. Oh, no, the next one, it doesn't. It was just those, that the ones before. Okay. Yes. Then the next, O Vishnu, impregnate her, make fine, strong sons, put 10 sons in her, make 11 men in this house. Right? That's why you see is that if you go back some generations, I mean, when I came to, remember coming to India, then the generations that were there at that time, you know, kind of the more the, you could say the middle-aged grihasthas, it was very standard that they had 10 kids. Like everybody had 10 kids. It was kind of a really standard thing. So this is where it comes from. You know, so that's there with 10 kids and you know, okay, things are happening like that. But in any case, you know, it also mentions this is a general thing. The Brahmins and that generally stick to one or two like that. And, the point is that principle is there and then how many they want to get involved in, and that's up to them, right? Then this one is also an interesting one. Be the ruler of your husband's father. Be the ruler of your husband's mother. Be the ruler of your husband's sisters. Be the ruler of your husband's brothers. So probably nowadays, especially, you know, anywhere, but especially in India, probably when he says this, they should bring a megaphone so that all the in-laws get to hear this mantra. Like that. But be the ruler as ruling you see through, being gentle-eyed, good-minded, beautiful. It's through the good qualities and nice personality that she conquers them. And so therefore, then they want to be nice. But as it said, unless they are trying, you can't help them either. So unless the mother-in-law is trying or the father is trying, you can't make it work. So that means everybody's trying. The husband's trying to be a good husband, wife's trying to be a good wife. Mother and father of the groom are trying to be very nice themselves and help out and, you know, the interaction, then it becomes very dynamic. In other words, if you know what is the standard, you're trying to attain the standard, then you have the best shot at things working smoothly and getting as close as possible. Right? Then he says, may your heart be fixed on my life's goals, right? So it's going to be Krishna. May your mind follow after mine, right? Because then you have something to go. With mind and soul, be devoted to my words. May Vishnu join us together, right? But then that means is that he has to have goals. He has to, his mind has to be going somewhere progressive. And his words have to be based, the words and actions have to be based on what is progressive in spiritual life and in devotional life, you know, and even just in the, what's proper to make the secondary elements of religion work. If that's strong and all that, then it moves forward. Then it's naturally something to follow. But if he's not, if he doesn't have proper life goals or his not controlling his mind and not, you know, using his actions and words properly, then what's to follow? So you can see, she has to follow. But at the same time, as the point is he has to lead. And the same prayer before is, may they all have a nice relationship, all the in-laws relationship, but she has to be trying to be nice to them. And they have to be therefore there. In other words, be the ruler of your husband's father. So the standard is that she can control him and can control the mother-in-law, right? Can control the husband through affection. They want to do. You like somebody, then they say, yeah, we're going to do this, and you're happy with it. So that means she's trying for that, and they know it's the standard that is here, not that, no, we're the parents, and we're in control, and when we say stuff, it's all got to happen. It's kind of like, yeah, you're born in the wrong country, sorry. You know? Like that, you know, at least, you know. Yeah. With the bride on his left, the groom should perform Vyasta Samastama Mahavyarati Homa with ghee. So in other words, at this point now that's all said, now you can say is now the vows of that, all the different things, the moods, everything, all the main things have been done. So the preliminary purifications, preliminary rites, the main body of the wedding, and now that will be complete here, and now then they complete this part of that wedding because the Laj Homa was a specific yajna. And so now the Burbhuvaswa, the Myahavyarati is offered, just like it was offered in the beginning, now it's the end. So whatever you're doing a yajna, then it's sampat. It means it has to be, you know, connected. It's like a sandwich. So they always start with Mahavyarati, end with Mahavyarati. Any yajna. If you're doing Purushukta, you start with that, end with that. Then you're doing Sri Shukta. Then since you ended with the other one, it's the beginning of the next one. Then when you entry, then you do again. So in between every section, any change in the ritual of the wedding, the yajna or the fire itself to a different fire, then the Mahavyarati is used. Okay. He should then offer ghee-soaked wood without mantra and then perform all the rites of Aditya Karma. Beginning with Satyayana Homa, right? So now at this point, the marriage is finished. You know, it means this part of the whole ceremony, because we're talking about so many days. But then you're talking here is that this part is finished. So at this point, it could finish. And then they're going to be doing, the next one will be the Uttara Vibhaha, subsequent rites. So these are ones that are done later in the evening, especially. Like that. So then, as we saw, you can break it up. There can be something in the morning, something at noon, something in the evening. So you can even have three programs in the one day. Or some of the things can be done. I mean, you would, yeah. Means all the purificatory rites and all that, they can be done in the morning. But if you need the early morning, then you would use that. If it's later in the day, you do them early. Otherwise, you've done them the day before, you know, or like that. So in other words, all these different sections are there. Or you can just, if you're doing them all together, you just, from here, you just keep going and just go through and do the Aditya Karma when you finish all the subsequent rites. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So up to the end of, okay, Vamadevi Ganam. Then give dakshin to the brahmanas. But if Chaturthi Homa page is done on the day of the wedding, Yudhicha Karma should be done after that, right? So here you can remember is that when you're giving doctrine to the Brahmins, that would be done at this time. And then when you do the next ceremony, then again, it's done. So you see is after each ceremony, the doctrine is there. If you're doing it all together, all at once, then you're giving the doctrine at the end when it be done. But always remember, it's not that you save money by doing it all at once. If you're doing the whole thing at once, the doctrine should be equivalent to as all the smaller ones that you gave in between. Right? Yes. Which one has to, you know, it always has to be remembered, from Dharma comes Artha. It never says by being miserly you become rich. No, because the miser, he may become rich by keeping his money, but he also, but he, when he dies, then all that money is also left. So in other words, he was a miser, so he lives like a poor man, and he died like a poor man. So therefore, in the Vedic, is that you do these things, you give in charity. The more you give, the more comes in. The more sacrifice you do, the more comes in. So it's a constant movement like that. That's the point of sacrifice. It's abhideya. It's applied. So it's always happening. Right? So the utra vivaha. So now we establish yojak, right? We have the fire for the previous. The groom should establish the fire yojak in the kunda when the stars are visible in the sky, right? So this means that it's when the sandhya has started, just at the end of the sun. While the bride sits silently, the groom should throw wood into the fire silently, then perform vyasta samasta mahavyarati homa with ki. So we see as the yojak is done, and so then, you know, if you're going to continue, you go, that means, so if you're doing again in the evening, you'll do Kushandi and start that part again. You know, all the things, installing the fire and going around and putting the kusa grass and all these different things. Then once that's done, then, So once that's done, then you start from here. And if not, you've already done Kushandi, you just continue with the wedding, you go to here. But otherwise, the point of the Uttari Govar is happening in the evening. So you can have the wedding, everyone can go, you know, eat, have lunch or whatever it is, then have some rest in that, and, you know, hang out and do whatever they do, go to the temple, then, you know, move around, see people. Then you have in the evening, then again, they're going to do this. So the Uttara Vivaha is the subsequent that is done there like that. Or you can do all this, and then when they do these points can be done with the Dhruva Darshanam, that could be done in the evening. You know, even if not the Uttara Vivaha you do now, but the Dhruva Darshana, then you do that in the evening, and you don't have to have the yagya and all that to do that. It's not necessary. Also, Bhojanam, you don't have to do it this time. It'd be at the time when they're going to eat. It's just when they're going to take prasad, they would do this, right? So you don't have to do it as part of the ceremony. Many times people like to do it. It's a big thing. They get there, eat, you know, but feed each other and do a whole thing like that. You know, it's great fun, but you don't have to, it's not generally done during the ceremony. It's done when they do that. So the Uttara Vivaha, how are we doing? Time. Okay. Then the groom should offer ghee into the fire 6 times with the following mantras, sprinkling the remnants from the shruva on the bride's head. So means to be able to do that nicely. So the easiest, you have a little pot of water, a pot that's kind of shallow and just a little bit of water inside. No, not very little, but just, you know, not a lot. It's not completely full. And so when you offer, you take the ghee, you throw into the fire, and then you don't just hold there. You throw into the fire and then bring it back. And then when you get back, so the front of the shruva is over the water, then you stop. You know, so it's kind of a sudden stop, and so whatever drop is on there will drop into the water. So you've thrown, drop, you know, but it's not, you don't do it too quickly or you get too much ghee, because all the ghee that would have gone in the fire, half of it goes here. You throw there, and so you do the end, that flick of the wrist there for the ghee, but then you bring it back and flick again, and there's always something there, and you'll get the drop. And so it goes into the water. Then at the end, you take it all, and then put it on the bride's head. Does that make sense? So you don't have to do it each time, because otherwise it might be a real mess otherwise. Okay. Whatever lies, so this is then what he says, whatever lies inauspicious in the combinations of markings in your eyelids, in the curls of your hair, I nullify by this final sacrifice. Right? Because uttara also means this after. So you've done the previous and the ajja samskara for purification and that. Now this is uttara, you know, it's the after, the final. Whatever faults lie in the second, whatever faults lie in your hair and in your weeping, I nullify by this final sacrifice. So this one's hair in general, and the other one's the curls in the hair that you see here. Here gets twice. Hair. Then the third, whatever faults lie in your character, in your words, and in your smile, I nullify by this final sacrifice. Right? So the smile is that, you know, it doesn't have that, maybe doesn't have that genuine element just because of just whatever it is, the impurities in the heart just don't allow like that, or that you're smiling for any particular, you have some diabolical plan or something like that. So, you know, you purify like that. Gandhi, fourth, whatever fault lies in your glances, in your teeth, in your hands and feet, I nullify by this final sacrifice. Then the fifth, whatever faults lie in your thighs and your hips and your ankles and in your joints, I nullify by this final sacrifice. Then the last, whatever was inauspicious in the parts of your body, I have nullified by this final sacrifice. Right? So then it's just everything may be sitting there because we don't know what's going on from previous lives and all that. Whatever karma may be coming through, that may be all removed and everything goes smoothly. Right? Then the Dhruva Darshanam then is going to be bride and groom should rise and go outside. Right? So then if all this be done in the evening, it would be natural. Then they get up to go outside. You know, if it's, because generally, you know, the yagya will be, you know, like in the courtyard of the house or yagsha, so they have to go out where they can see the sky. The groom should point out the pole star to her and make her vow. In other words, it has to be where they are there. It also should be in a spot where you can actually see the stars and see the pole star, and he should actually know where it is, right? So, I mean, the basic thing, it's north and it's low on the horizon, so at least in India, I think farther up north you go, it becomes higher, like that. So he says, she vows, she says, you are the pole star, fixed forever. May I be fixed like the pole star in my husband's house, in the service of Vishnu and his devotees. He should show her the constellation Arundhati, situated in the Great Bear or Seven Sages, and make her recite the following. So Arundhati would be the Seven Sages, or in the West they call the Big Dipper. You know, that looks like a pot from there. So I'm not sure which one's Arundhati, but I think it's one of the, you know, outstanding ones. We can probably look it up. It'll show which one's Arundhati in there. It'll be the brighter one. And so then she says, oh, Arundhati, faithful wife of Vashishta, one of the seven sages, as a wife, I also am now fixed in my husband's house. Yeah, because there's always, you know, this very nice relationship, close kind of relationship that the women have amongst themselves. You know, if there is that kind of senior night, it's always has that kind of more motherly or, you know, friendly kind of element to it. Men can be quite very formal, but with the women, then it always has that kind of element to it. The groom should look at his wife and say, fixed is the sky, fixed is the earth, fixed is the world, the universe, fixed are these mountains, fixed is this wife in her husband's house, in the service of Vishnu and his devotees. But so fixed is the sky, because we see is that the constellations, they don't move. They're already fixed. The planets move, right? So the zodiac signs don't move. Houses move. We could decide which one of it is the first house, this, but the zodiac signs, they don't move. And which nakshatras are in which, that doesn't move. So it's fixed. The earth is fixed, right? The Bhumandala is fixed. It's not moving. Like that. So another point, how the earth is in the center, right? The mountains, of course, are, especially now that Krishna, Indra cut off their wings, so they're not going anywhere. The bride should say, I, being of whatever her gotra, salute you, husband of gotra, You know, so in other words, she's come from one gotra to the next gotra. The white groom should respond, fix your mind in Krishna. So Krishna mati bhava samye. A woman with husband and child, right, because he had one in the beginning who would tie the knot and all that, could be same one or a different one, should lead them to a pedestal and sprinkle water over them from a pot using mango leaves, right? So you're going to have a pot for sprinkling. And so then that woman shall take them over to a place, a pedestal, you know, some raised platform, and then sprinkle them with water. You know, again, nicely. The husband should go to the fire and perform the Vyasta Samasti Mahavyarti Homa. Then sadly offer Gisok Uda Pradesh Lincoln in the fire. Now we should perform Uditya Karma. Right? So if you're going to do before, then you would do through Uta Vivaha and then do the Uditya Karma. Then the Dhruva Darshana would just be on its own, just as that, only no need of a yajna. Just as Bhojana doesn't require the yajna. So then he would perform that there. Then we see as the further yajnas would be done after some days. I think it means Jnana Rohana, Chaturthi, Triti, like this. They're all done. Leaving leaving the girl's house and going to the, and arriving at the boy's house. Like that. So that will be then a further yajna. If you're doing it all at the time, then it would be done at this time. But we could, as we see, is that the Dhruva Darshan and the Bhojanam doesn't, and the mounting the vehicle doesn't need to be, doesn't need to fit into the yajna itself. He's going to be, because they are going to look at the stars in the evening. They are going to eat, you know, they don't have to eat the yajna, and they are going to get in the vehicle for going to, you know, to wherever they're going to live. So these two ones would be done at those times, right? And then the yajna can just either stop at those points or can just go from the main yajna after the seven steps and those points that are made and Panigrahana, then go into Uta Vivaha, and then go straight into the Vriti Homa, because these are all yajnas. And the other three are to be done at the other times. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so I'm doing. Okay, so time is up. So we'll start tomorrow with, no, Monday with Bhojanam. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.